Welcome to a podcast of the Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
I planted a tree that eats other trees. It is a California oak wood. It's a giant 9.5 feet tall tree. When you plant it, it grows to 462 feet. Also, I bought a coal-burning toaster. Yeah. We're spending way too much on electricity. Why not invest in coal to use your toaster? It takes, like, you know, 96 pieces of coal to, you know, toast a bagel. Half a bagel. Because you got to flip it. So I'm not good at math, but, you know, a little less than 200 pieces to toast the full thing.
But it's a delicious bagel. Oh. Once it's got the taste of coal
You get the smoky flavor of coal up in that bagel. You throw in a little schmear.
It's like eating a burger, like a cookout burger, without the meat or the cheese or any of the condiments that normally you remember in a cookout burger.
And then, you know, throw some gasoline on it, and then you got your taste.
Yeah.
Delicious. Delicious.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Angie's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a pierogi's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere. It's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees. Our business is people and their love for trees. He's a legendary, charismatic megafauna in his own mind. Here he is, Mike Novak.
Good planets are in the main. Right.
Now, if I can only find where that is.
Who on earth do you have in there?
It is. Let's have that one more time, folks.
That's the best looking group of guests you've ever had.
Well, they are, aren't they? Fabulous. We've got the Joliet Montessori School represented here this morning, and the best thing is, they brought me kolachkis.
Oh, they know the way to your heart, don't they?
I know the Our Town people. They're all they're on the other side of the glass going, oh, yeah, kolachkis, man.
Now that they see them, they know what they are?
Yeah. You're not allowed in here. No, we'll send them out there. So you just have to save a couple for me at the end of the show.
I want one, too.
You've got them here. Yeah, we're all separated by glass now. In the old days, they were just like screens. Like mosquito screens that were separated the studios. Not really.
I was going to say, we would have gotten bitten if that had been the case.
Whoa,
what'd you hit?
I hit that fader there. And welcome. Good morning. It's the Mike Novak Show. I have lots of guests in the studio. In fact, all morning I have guests in the studio. Now, I've got a ton of names here, a ton of people, and thanks to Dennis for helping me put this together. And as I said, these folks are from the Joliet Montessori School, and they are part of Olive Living. And it's connected with the school, and we will explain that, how that all works in a second. The point is that they work together to create a sustainable business, and it's not that the interesting part is that the kids are running the business. Yeah, and I'm getting nods from the adults in the room here too. And by the way, do not count me as an adult in the room.
Oh God,
right?
No. Absolutely not.
No. So I'm very excited about that, and we'll talk about that in a second. And in the second half of the show, 10 o'clock hour, another really, really cool thing, and that is something called The Plant. And as I said on my – you're not – you know about The Plant, okay? Well, we may talk about that too. It's as I said on my website, it's not a science fiction movie about a horticultural experiment gone terribly, terribly wrong. No. It is something else. It's something on the south side of Chicago, and it's an old meatpacking plant that's being converted into the future. Basically, I think that's one way you could put it. And I will have some folks from there who will join me. Blake Davis is going to be here along with Tim Sparer and Carla McGarrah. But let's start right off the bat here with all the folks in the room. Okay, I'm going to try to read some names here. Well, we got Sue Brissett, who is you're the person who told me all about it. And do you realize it was 4 months ago?
I do realize it was 4 months ago. But
I'm sorry.
No, I actually just set you up on my email to keep emailing you.
And I did. And, you know, and one of the things I told Sue, I said, hey, listen, it's on my radar. Just keep in touch.
Him.
And then she would send these emails. Hi, we're still out here. Hi. Hi, thanks. And I'd go, yeah, it's Christmas. I'll get back to you,
right.
You know.
Right.
And I did, finally. She wrote to me the other way. I went, yeah, let's set this up. We're just going to do this. And now you're the coordinator of Olive Living?
Correct. It's an L3C corporation that we created maybe – this is our second year.
All right. Now, I have to admit, I've never even heard of an L3C corporation.
It's
now, and you describe it on the website, or actually in an email, I think, it's as a low-profit entity. Well, that's just like doing radio.
Right.
Okay. I am a low-profit entity here. But what is an L3C?
An L3C is a corporation that would act as a limited liability corporation, but you're able to have a profit, and it is based in education. It has no political connections whatsoever because you work with not-for-profits.
Ah, okay. And the not-for-profit you're working with is the school?
Joliet Montessori School.
Okay. Now, is that okay, and you got to just explain these things to me because I really don't know how schools work and that sort of thing. Are most schools nonprofits, or is Montessori in particular? Well, go ahead, Carol. Carol Andrew, who's the head of the Joliet Montessori School.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Most private schools are a 501c3, which allows them to operate as a charitable organization for the purpose of education.
Mm-hmm. Now, see, I did not know that, and I have started two 501c3s in my life. This business, by the way, is not a 501c3. It only, in terms of the money that comes in, it's like a 501c3. So how did you two get together? How did who started this idea?
Mr. Brandon, actually, who is the adolescent director over at Joliet Montessori School, he couldn't be here with us today.
You know, and I love the fact that every time you write, you talk about Mrs. Carol and Mr. Brandon and Sue. We're all, well, some of us are adults right here, but we're all adults in the room because all you guys are working anyway. You guys are all working hard back there. But it's okay. You can use their real names. It's really okay.
Brandon, right. Brandon. Okay. That's how he's known, just Brandon.
And Brandon came up with the idea?
He did. We were actually in a laser tag room when we were out an outing with the kids for their end of the year. And that's when my son had graduated from the adolescent program. And we discussed having a co-op and having the kids do the work. And I said, let's work on that. Let's see how it would look. And we created the L3C. We went down to Springfield and created the L3C.
And how long ago was that?
That would have been, what, July? This is our second year in business.
Okay, so this has not been going on very long. This is sort of a grand experiment right now.
Correct.
And Carol, how would you say the experiment's going?
Well, it's a wonder to watch. It really is a business. The trucks come, get unloaded, packed, groceries set up. They take orders. They keep books. It really is a business.
Yeah, but it is a business. I think we skipped a step here for our listening.
The educational part?
No, the part that says, you know, what exactly is this business and who's running it? And it's a real business.
Correct.
That you set up, but you made the students the caretakers of this business.
Correct.
And the employees, so to speak, as well.
Correct.
Although I assume they don't make salaries.
No, they get a trip to, like, I don't know, where'd you guys go, Lester? Great America? Or, and we did, we visited an Amish community. We do different things with the kids during the year.
Okay. All right. And they in the room, and they're all stand. Well, who got the seat there?
My name's John Baird.
And you do cooking and handle, what, I can't read the writing here.
I send out usually like the...
Reminders and handles. Dennis, nice handwriting there, pal. Okay. We got this little cheat sheet because we didn't know exactly, I didn't know exactly who was going to be in here. You're a chef?
Not quite. I usually help out if somebody asks me, but everybody kind of helps out with the cooking.
Uh-huh. And what grade are you in?
Ninth.
Okay. You know, I can barely boil an egg myself. So what kind of stuff do you like to cook?
Usually desserts and stuff. They're fun.
Kolachkis?
not that. Kolachkis?
He did an awesome creme brulee.
Really? Creme brulee.
I'm telling you. He was good at it.
We'll keep you in mind, John. All right. Now we're going to kind of rotate in and out here. You got the headsets. Let's slide in everybody here. Just somebody grab a seat. All right. Here we go. Musical radio chairs. Who are you?
I'm Ryan Hartman.
Okay. There's Ryan Hartman. You're the accountant.
That's what I did last year. We kind of switch out jobs.
Really?
Yes.
Would you like to do my books for Mike Novak, LLC? I got taxes coming up. What kind of books? Do you do any taxes, or is it just the plain accounting with the goods and services?
No, we did taxes last year.
You didn't. I imagine you just didn't get TurboTax. Did you do them yourself?
We actually did sales tax. We went down to our accountant's office in downtown Chicago.
Okay.
And he taught
us. So you're talking taxes. You're not talking end-of-year taxes. You're talking about everyday taxes.
They had a hand in it, and our tax returns are on record at the school as well. We send them our QuickBooks file.
Mm-hmm.
But we did the sales tax. We went down to Schumann, Simon, and Grodecki, the kids did, and they taught us how to do the taxes. And then the next month, we did them, and they reviewed it.
And what grade are you in?
I'm in eighth grade.
You're just humiliating me. That's what you guys are trying to do, huh? That's the point of this, huh? and of course, Carol's nodding her head. Yes, you should have studied harder in school. Yes, you should have. You wouldn't be in radio.
I was just saying, I'm nodding too.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, thanks, Heather.
Sorry, a fact's a fact, babe.
Well, Ryan, welcome. And what's the most difficult thing you had to worry about in terms of accounting?
All of it was kind of confusing at first.
Good. I'm so glad. I feel so much better. All right, take those headsets off. Get out of that chair. Let's bring somebody else in here. We only have a certain number of microphones. We should put the adults, get them out of their chairs. All right, who have we got here?
Eddie Gomez.
All right, Eddie. And you're in sales, I understand. Oh, see, they are. Ask and ye shall receive. Everybody, all that bumping around you here is people moving into seats. That's good. This will make this faster. Eddie, tell me about sales. I mean, do you have to do advertising campaigns, or do you just, we had Ryan who's doing the books. What is different in working in sales?
I don't work too much on sales. I mostly just unload the truck and pack the food.
That's what they all say.
Everything comes in case packs, so they have to take apart the cases and weigh the cases.
Okay.
And disseminate the orders into customers' orders.
And what grade are you in?
Eighth.
Okay. And what's the best part about this process?
Of what process exactly?
I don't know. How many different jobs do you have? You unload the truck. Anything else?
You eat the grapes.
Yeah, I eat the grapes.
Okay, good. And on your right, my left, you are?
I'm Tim Spacia.
And it says here, you're the QuickBooks guy.
Yeah.
Is that true? Now, see, everybody seems to have a lot of different jobs, but have you really been focusing on QuickBooks?
Recently, I have been.
Uh-huh.
Like, everyone really does everything.
So, and that's a good thing because you can all back up each other, I would assume, right? And they're all nutty. Okay. You know, I've got Quicken, and I've had it, I don't know, 5 years, and I still don't understand it. And I use about, 1% of it. Can we have a little lesson? after the show?
You can create them an invoice.
Yeah, I can make an invoice. That's what I can do.
Okay. And then on my right, you are?
Kate Spezia.
Kate Spezia. And I've got you. You're a marketing person.
I am.
All right. Yes. Tell me a little bit about the marketing for this.
Well, we do business cards, signs. We did a flyer once, help with the website online, things like that, trying to get the word out.
And how successful do you think you've been?
I think it's gone well. I mean, in terms of, like, website, there we have a lot of views on the website and everything. So I think it's really working out.
Do you know how many hits you're getting on your website?
I didn't do the Google Analytics yet.
Oh, okay.
I haven't integrated it yet.
You know, those of us who do the Google Analytics, we're always afraid to do it anyway. We'll put it off next week. I really don't want to know the real numbers that are coming. What grade are you in, Kate?
Eighth.
All right. Anybody? So mostly eighth and ninth grade here? Anybody?
A couple of seventh.
It's only two seventh.
Who's the seventh grade? You're a seventh grader.
Yes,
and
I am.
And you are?
I'm Stella Spezia.
Okay. And you're Kate's sister.
Yes, I am.
I recognize the last name. And what do you do, Stella?
I pack and weigh.
Mm-hmm.
So we take the orders, and then we take the food and put them in boxes. Yeah, and weigh the food, make sure it's the right weight, of course.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Well, but that's a really good point. Do you feel the pressure because you got customers, real customers, that are paying good money for this food, and do you feel like you want to get it right?
Yeah, and sometimes we do mess up, but people go over the food after we've packed it all up. People go over it, so...
When you say people?
Like, parents that help.
Ah, so, well, that's good. You've got redundancy there.
The double check, yes.
Yeah, the double check. So, the kids do it first, and then the adults look it over. I'll bet you guys get it right most of the time, is what I'm thinking. What do you think?
Yeah, pretty much.
She's, yeah. Pretty much. All right, and Maggie, you're finally Maggie Dolph?
Yeah.
What grade are you in?
Eighth.
And what do you do?
I take the inventory.
Okay.
Yeah.
So where is the inventory kept?
In one of the cabinets in the kitchen, and I just take it out.
See, I was sitting here thinking, imagining this warehouse that she's, you know, on this truck and going around and taking the inventory.
What do we inventory? Simply Organics.
Simply Organics is what we inventory.
Well, okay.
They're little packets of, like, ranch dressing.
And spices.
Spices.
Mm-hmm.
Cake mixes, correct. Pancakes.
All right, well, you know what? We need to get to the heart of what it is you're doing here. I got to do some business myself. All right. Oh, wait, did I? No, we've gotten everybody. Okay, that's what I thought. Let's rearrange a little bit. Let's get, again... I'd like to have all of you students who are participating in this to weigh in whenever you get a chance. Well, let's put Carol and Sue there, one of you sit in there, or whoever, there you go, and we'll talk about this some more, because I'm still not sure my listening audience has an idea of exactly how this all comes together. And that's what I want to talk about. We've got a bunch of folks in the studio from Olive Living, L3C, and the Joliet Montessori School. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM, and we'll be right back to them. Now, if you haven't ordered your D. Landreth seed catalog yet for 2012, here's another tasty reason. And maybe this is something that you guys have. Anybody, do you ever deal with ground cherries?
No, not yet.
Okay, you might. The ground cherry, also known as the Cape gooseberry, is native to just about every state in the Union. It is the ultimate native plant. It is a member of the nightshade family, so it's related to tomatoes, potatoes, eggplants, and tomatillos. But it is not a tomatillo, or tomatillo, if you prefer, and it did not originate near Cape Town, South Africa. The Cape in the name refers to the husk surrounding the fruit. It has a perfectly flat growth habit. It cannot and will not grow upward, and it cannot be staked. It usually reaches a diameter of 3 feet, but it can grow larger. It produces small, cherry-sized, yellowish-green, round fruit protected by a husk, like a tomatillo, that turns light brown when the fruit is ripe. A single plant will produce hundreds of fruit. Now, it tastes like a cross between vanilla, pineapple, and tomato. Some people aren't crazy about the taste, but some think that ground cherries are the cat's footy pajamas. You can order it by logging on to LandrethSeeds.com, LandrethSeeds, or call 800-654-2407. Or you can find them on Facebook, D. Landreth Seed Company, purveyor of fine seeds since 1784.
At Innovative Insulation Solutions, their mission is to deliver the highest performing foam insulation systems available on today's market with an incredible R value of up to 7 per inch. Their history of safe and effective application of these systems, coupled with total dedication to quality, consistently earns their customers' trust and satisfaction. They specialize in all types of foam insulation. Spray-applied close-cell and open-cell polyurethane foam insulation, closed-wall cavity injection, and foam-in-place masonry block insulation. Innovative Insulation Solutions is totally committed to anticipating, solving, and supporting all of your foam insulation needs. Call Innovative Insulation Solutions today at 847-454-9081 or go to gotfoaminsulation.com. That's 847-454-9081 or go to gotfoaminsulation.com.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
You've heard me talk about tree keepers who voluntarily help care for our urban forests, but you might not be aware of other volunteer opportunities through open lands, like Stream Leaders, a hands-on training course designed to enhance citizen participation in stream conservation, or Trail Keepers, who monitor and maintain nearly 350 river miles on 7 water trails in 9 counties in northeastern Illinois. The point is that open lands relies on volunteers to accomplish important conservation goals throughout the region. In addition, they offer classes that provide specialized training to help you prepare for these activities. Since 1963, Open Lands has been protecting the natural and open spaces of northeastern Illinois and the surrounding region while teaching ordinary citizens how to be stewards of the land and water and its living treasures. Become a part of that community. Volunteer your time, donate to a project, or take a class. For more information, go to openlands.org. Openlands, conserving nature for life. See, you're finding out that what it is, even in a talk radio station, it's all about listening to the music. That's a, you know, you just got to play the music and get into it. I've got a whole bunch of people in the studio, and you can hear the change in the dynamics here as I open up all the microphones because everybody's here. We've got Sue and Carol and Kate and Tim and Eddie and Ryan and John and Stella and Maggie. Let's all say hi.
Hi.
It's great. You know, I love having a studio audience. It's, we got to do this more often. And they're from the Joliet Montessori School. I wanted to get into why this kind of a business. You know, you could have done a lot of different businesses, and they would have taught the students the same things in terms of business and accountability and so forth. Why sustainable? Why organic?
Well, it goes back to the beginning, which is Maria Montessori believed in education that was authentic and meaningful, and something that people could get emotionally engaged as an essential element. And so she encourages us to help particularly our adolescent community become attached to the land and to really experience what it means to be self-responsible but in community and responsive to the needs of community. And food is such a politically important conversation among our greater community and among our own families that it just seemed like a logical business to support those educational goals and at the same time giving them the authentic, meaningful experience of being an entrepreneur.
And you don't... Okay, how much of this do you grow? Do you grow any of it?
No. but we have promised Brandon, their guide,
yes.
that we will have a greenhouse by the end of the school year to start doing seeds. And the whole school will be involved with that. So our little preschoolers will be planting the seeds and getting them to sprout. And then half they'll take home to their own families and half will go up to the elementary children. And they will be in charge of kind of hardening them off and getting them sort of thriving so that they can be planted in a garden, and so when they're ready for sort of sales, then they will pass up to the adolescent program who will sell the plants and also plant some in a garden. We are limited by space, so we are trying to have that connection to food production and the environment as best we can in an urban setting.
So in a sense right now, it's more about business and less about
not
food,
necessarily.
But, okay.
We have gone to Rainbow Harvest, and you guys can attest to Shanahan has a wonderful greenhouse.
Just pop right in. Tell us about going there.
Rainbow Harvest. Who wants to talk about Rainbow Harvest?
Go ahead, Kate. You were the one who wrote the article on it.
It's a Montessori dad actually owns it, and it's a really cool hydroponic greenhouse where he grows all kinds of lettuces mostly. And it's just, oh my, it's so cool to go in. It's like this huge system, and I mean, all the work that goes into it is really cool.
So they would go and seed some days, and we'd spend about an hour or so at Kevin McDonald's greenhouse out in Shanahan. And they would replant, and then we would harvest towards the end, and then we sell that lettuce.
Uh-huh.
That's the lettuce that we carry.
So the goal, though, you're saying, and how many grades are in this school?
We have pre-K through 8th grade and an occasional 9th grader who chooses to stay with us before going on to high school.
I don't blame you. You know, you're probably learning a lot more about business than I ever did. I didn't know that nothing about nothing when it came to business. So the goal is maybe somewhere down the road, because you're teaching the younger children how to get things started, and maybe you'll have your own production beds.
That's what we're trying to do. That is one of the goals of the school. We are limited by space, and to put in a greenhouse the size that Brandon would like is going to take a little bit of land, and we don't own the land behind the school.
And that is that the goal, to acquire that land, or are you going to do?
It's owned
what do
by
you
Commonwealth
do?
Edison, so it's a little bit
difficult.
Oh, well,
you're not going to get that. Okay. I want one of the marketing people back there to tell me about how many customers you have and what kind of customers they are. And anybody, somebody who hasn't jumped in so far, come on.
Who's marketing?
Who packs the sales? Who comes in when you guys, when we yell customer service and the doorbell rings?
I don't really do that.
How many are parents at the school?
A lot.
We do get a lot of folks from the outside.
Yep.
And because we carry a lot of the beef and the chicken as well.
Well, that's the other thing. You have meat products as well.
Correct. We work with some of local farmers, the Amish, and we took a trip to the Amish, actually. We
spent
a day.
Yeah, you've got it on your website.
We spent a day with the Amish. That was really cool.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
And, well, how many clients do you have altogether?
There's probably about, I want to say 100 off and on. Not everybody's an order all the time.
And are they all connected to the school or some of them connected to the community?
A lot are connected to the community.
Mm-hmm.
Our bank is one of them that comes in now. We have quite a few clients that come in from Chase Bank.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just other people in the community who have heard about us, know about us, or are related somehow, some way, have a friend of somebody else, word of mouth, and that's how they've come. It's hard to find organics in Joliet, Illinois.
Indeed.
Yes.
Well, this is a good start then, isn't it? And especially to get the local students involved and your neighbors and so forth. I was wondering, in terms of the sales and the business end of things, how successful a business is this?
It's successful. Mm-hmm. We don't make a ton of money. We're always funding our next project.
Mm-hmm.
But if I could just say the quality of the products that have been brought in is just phenomenal. We're getting things before they would be in a store for people to buy. So the quality of the produce that's available to our families is just phenomenal.
Yeah, it's also teaches us a great work ethic and just kind of future goals. And or it teaches us about things that we could use in the future. And
You mean when you graduate and you get on to your real lives? This is your real life, actually, right now. This, you know, this is part of living. And the fact that, do you feel like you're learning about new foods and by being part of this?
We actually had We actually had something called a Buddha's hand.
Uh-huh.
It was like a weird, like, citrus fruit. Sadly, it wasn't all that popular, so we don't carry it anymore.
What was that? Give that to me again.
It was called a Buddha's hand.
And what is that?
It's a citrus fruit, actually, that's a limited season, kind of like blood oranges have a limited season.
So this was an experiment? Say, hey, you guys should try this.
Right. We order a lot through Goodness Greenness, and so we get their list mainly of what they'll offer every week. And so we kind of pick one random thing that nobody ever knew about, and we put it out there to see if...
But now, this is how you learn about the marketplace.
Correct.
Yeah. You try something out. And nobody wants it.
We didn't order it.
It's like being, you know, a radio show. You do a radio show. Is anybody listening? I don't know. Maybe they are. You know, it's just you throw stuff out there and hope that people want to be part of it. And you were going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say that, we get tons of different types of citruses and stuff. And it's like, I didn't even know if that was like any, like a fruit.
Well, and I would imagine other kinds of greens and stuff. You know, I've been part of CSAs, and one of the things you learn when you're with a CSA, which is Community Supported Agriculture, you get these packages each week of stuff that you might not have ever eaten before. And you have to learn how to prepare it because that's what you got, you know? You don't want to just toss it. Anybody else want to? We're wrapping up here. Anybody got any final words? Yeah, go ahead.
We did want to present you with our salsa that was made. That's one of our next projects that we're doing. We are going to try and take that salsa to market, to put it on a grocery shelf.
I have the salsa right here in my hot little hands. And, okay, is this a mild or medium or spicy salsa?
We kind of make kind of all three of those types of salsas.
What kind did we give him?
Yeah,
you might want it.
Because I love salsa.
It's mild.
That will be fine. And if I want to spice it up, I'll add a little something to it. But it looks wonderful. Thank you so much.
You're
so, and you're going to start.
We're going to start working with the health department in order to get certified food handlers.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to come in and give us a class to the kids, and then we have to get it shelf tested. We have to find a state kitchen to do it in and figure out our packaging and the requirements from the health department to make happen.
Yeah, and that's one more step.
And then they're going to have to figure out how much to charge for it once we've figured out all the prices that go along.
And hopefully we are graduating young people who are ready to take their place in an economy that's changing with the tools where they won't have to just look for a job, but they know how to create their own businesses.
You know, that's funny you should say that. I was watching television this past week, And there was a story on the news about people in midlife and in their 40s and 50s who have lost their jobs in the last few years and were trying to get new jobs. And here they are waiting for people to hire them. And I'm looking at the tube and I'm saying, make your own job. But the point is, those people don't know how to do that. They know how to make a resume and wait for somebody to hire them. And, you know, it's not an easy thing to be your own business person. So when you're learning this now, you are so far ahead of the game. It's a whole mindset. We start thinking differently about, well, that job fell through. What am I going to create next? Instead of, oh, who will hire me next? It's very different. And if you can get a jump on that, you're going to be in much better shape than a lot of folks, especially, you know, the economy will probably go back up at some place, but it'll come down again, too. Yeah. And you have to have that in mind. Well, I want to thank everybody, Sue, Carol, Kate, Tim, Eddie, Ryan, John, Stella, Maggie, and Dad, yay, the driver on the side who's got the camera. Have you been videotaping this whole thing?
Absolutely.
Oh, my. All right, destroy that camera. And thank you all for
thank you for letting us come
all the way up here, and for the kolachkis and for the good work you're doing.
And the salsa,
which is right here. And if folks want to get involved, I've got the information on my website. Go to MikeNovak.net, go to this week's show, click on Olive Living L3C. Anybody can join.
And it really is wonderful. Organic produce and meats and eggs and milk.
Fabulous. All right. Thanks again. Everybody be careful getting home.
Thanks.
And please leave in single file.
Yes. All right.
Thank you. Here's a tip from the care of trees. As devastating as the emerald ash borer has been in the Midwest, it's important to know that there's hope. A group of university scientists and industry professionals called the Coalition for Urban Ash Tree Conservation issued this statement last year. Quote, despite availability of cost-effective treatments, many municipalities, property managers, and homeowners continue to rationalize tree removal as the only viable management strategy for EAB. This is based on erroneous beliefs that tree removal slows the spread of EAB or that treatment is not effective, economical, or environmentally sound. Current science supports conservation via treatment as a sensible and effective tool for managing healthy ash trees in urban settings. In many cases, tree conservation is economically and environmentally superior to tree removal. End quote. To make sure that your ash trees have the best possible chance against emerald ash borer, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Sort of my theme song.
Especially, I love the music you're picking today.
Oh, thank you. Are those kids amazing or what?
Very.
And nice.
Oh, my gosh.
And polite.
Well-mannered.
Yeah.
Educated. Even concerned all, citizens.
Even all sugared up on kolachkis.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Oh, you know they got to go get some awesome breakfast before coming into the city and stuff. It's been a good Sunday morning for them, I hope.
I sure hope so.
And I hope their classmates heard them on air and, oh, that was so cool. Because that's what happens when you do something very profound when you're young and it doesn't really hit you. you just, that's what comes to your head. It's like, oh, that was awesome, or that was cool. Remember, I was on a nature hike, and I saw a bald eagle swoop down and catch a fish right out of the lake.
Uh-huh.
And I was quite young, and I wasn't thinking, wow, the majestic beauty of nature, or, you know, the predator and prey scenario, the whole thing. The moment I saw that bird fly away, I was just like, that was so cool. That was the first thing that came out of my mouth. So.
I'm looking at a couple of tweets here about that segment. One is about, and I'm not exactly sure what it refers to. No, that's how you find out you need a new marketing plan. I wonder if that's what I was talking about, being finding yourself unemployed. Maybe. I got quoted in a tweet about people know how to make a resume for a job, but if you can learn to run a business in school, you got to jump on all that. Says Mike Novak. So that's all right. It is time for Rick DeMaio weather. Let us go to the phones. Rick, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Mike. I know all about reinventing myself, being basically kind of unemployed for about 3 years and kind of always looking for the straw that maybe kind of leads to other things. You know, you're always looking for something to stir the drink that will eventually hold on to for a long, long time. But it's not easy, and I think you mentioned you mentioned a good point there, is you have to plan for not the good times but the bad times.
Yeah, and I don't want to beat up on people who are out of work. Heavens no. That's hard.
No,
I'm just saying that sometimes you got to think outside the box, and a lot of people are just used to, I'm going to write the resume and see who can hire me, and sometimes you just have, as you say, have to reinvent yourself, come up with something completely out of the blue,
right,
and perhaps start your own business, which it's not easy, but sometimes you're better off that way. Being your own boss is not such a bad thing.
No, it's not, but it takes a lot of perseverance. It takes a lot of, you know, minor failures along the way, like you said, to kind of figure out what works and what doesn't work. And when you're in that situation, you basically say yes to everything.
Yeah. Yeah, you do. Please.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, whatever works and whatever makes things better. But reinventing yourself, I think, at least two or three times as you go through life. And I tell my students, I go, I tell them, if you're not going to get let go from a job or fired at least once in your life, you're very naive. And that's not to say it in a negative way, but it's almost, I think, more or less more the norm these days, as opposed to, you know, 25 years after you work in some place saying, oh, my gosh, I got let go. I can't believe I didn't see that coming. I think that's going to be more the norm over the next 20 or 30 years, which is a shame.
Well, you know, here's the thing. I think everybody needs to get fired once, at least once, all right?
Yeah,
because I figure...
It's humbling, without a doubt.
Yeah, Heather?
They told me I wasn't officially a radio person until after I got fired from my first gig. And once I got fired from my first gig, they're like, it's official, you work in radio.
I got fired from my very first job in radio in Detroit. And I thought, I was 25, and I thought my life was over. I said,
right.
Oh, my goodness, what am I going to do? Well, that was a long time ago. And but it's devastating,
right.
And that's what you need to learn, is to
right.
pick yourself up and move forward.
Yeah, and don't take the good times for granted, without a doubt.
Yeah. And I just got tweeted about startup capital. Yeah, you always need that, too.
Oh, yeah.
That's what mom and dad are for.
Yeah, but I think your own energy is your startup capital. It's, you know, if you wake up in the middle of the night with an idea. I was just reading an article about, you know, Entertainment Weekly, about Billy Crystal hosting the Oscars, and he woke up in the middle of the night at 2 in the morning and wrote down a bunch of things that he wanted to do in this upcoming show, which I thought was interesting. I mean, here's a person who's done it so many times, and yet he had an idea come to his mind. He woke up at 2 in the morning, wrote it down, and then was able to get back to sleep. And maybe he'll use it tonight, but we'll never know.
A lot of people do that sort of thing.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And speaking of startup capital, okay, I'm going to say something that I didn't think I was going to say. Something that's been posted on my Facebook for a little over a week is a project that I'm working on right now called Dig in Chicago, and it's a television show that I'm putting together with Jennifer Brennan from Chalet nursery, chalet, garden center up in Wilmette. And you can find a preview of it at MikeNovak.net if you go to the homepage. It's right at the top. And speaking of capital, hey, we're looking for people to back this. We're, you know, and not contribute, but to be advertisers and use that leverage to get their products sold so that we can do the television show about green living and cooking in Chicago. And I want people to take a look at that. And I want to, if you got a company and you're interested in advertising on television, hey, I would say take a look at it and get back to me. And, you know, let's put it out there. This is another way that people – we talk about reinventing yourself. I'm not exactly reinventing myself here, just going in a different direction, an added direction because I don't intend to give up radio. But if you're interested in digging Chicago, I say take a look at that page. Go to MikeNovak.net, and right at the top it says click here for a preview of Dig in Chicago, and I'd be happy to talk to you about it. So there. I put my own plug. Again, I jumped off the deep end there.
So in a few short words, you're saying, please
sponsor my show.
Please sponsor my show.
Yeah, in a nice way.
Can I have some money?
And right, yes, exactly. In a very professional.
No, really, can I have some?
Oh, no. No. And I hope people will do that. Now, one thing I want to get across before we're done, because you had a great idea when you wrote to me yesterday. You said, let's get people to call in, and I would say tweet in and Facebook in about the worst movie, since it's Oscar week, the worst movies about weather events ever. I think that's a great idea.
You know what? And so many come to mind because there haven't been that many, but I wonder if someone has an answer about, to me, the best tornado ever I've ever seen in a movie. I have it in my mind, but I wonder if someone else has the best tornado ever that's ever seen in a movie.
The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah. Where's my bell?
I thought the same thing.
Yeah, isn't that great? Heather, trivia says, you know, that the tornado was actually produced using pantyhose and sawdust that they would stretch and twist and film in stop action and then recreate it. And then they put a backdrop over it and then had Dorothy, running or whatever. This is like the first sort of, if you want to call it, you know, way of meshing two different mediums. But it was, to me, it was fantastic, and it had that wonderful sound and that grainy kind of black and white dusty look to it. But that's my pick for the best weather scene ever in a movie, Mike. I'm wondering if one of your viewers or listeners.
Hey, that's the TV thing coming up. Come on now, that's good.
has any other thoughts on the worst weather movies?
Yeah, there's been some pretty bad ones. Wasn't that what was the one where suddenly we were in the ice age over the weekend?
The Day After Tomorrow. I think that's called Tuesday for today.
Oh, no, really?
Oh, my God. Yeah. You know, the thing about it is Day After Tomorrow was a great movie because it talked about climate change and global warming and what may happen if we continue to go on this path. But it laid down the premise for what the Earth could eventually, you know, end up going back to, but not in a matter of 48 or 72 or 96 hours.
That was the weird thing. It's like the most massive low pressure center ever on the history of the planet, and suddenly we're in an ice age. I don't think so.
Stupid. Yeah. I mean, it was, and on top of that, Dennis Quaid, who I thought gave a great talk when he, you know, described what could happen, ended up, you know, walking all the way up to New York City to save his son, Jake Gyllenhaal. And just happened to be the only one walking across the snow and ice on I-95 from Washington, D.C. to New York over the course of 4 days. Go figure.
It must have been a holiday weekend.
Oh, yeah. It was terrible.
Yeah.
But the first part was good. After that, it was kind of bad. You know, Twister, again, I think was a great movie from a standpoint of how it educated people on the – still the, you know, I think some of the shortcomings of forecasting. They kept bringing it up. They kept talking about research. And I think that movie did more harm than good from a standpoint of, no, we don't forecast F5s, but we do forecast large thunderstorms that can produce tornadoes. But what it did, Mike, it really took the art and science of storm chasing to a whole nother level, where next thing you know, instead of having maybe four or five crews out over the plain states for maybe 2 or 3 days, you had 25 and maybe even 55 crews, basically people just jumping in their cars and running around, you know, taking pictures of thunderstorms and tornadoes. And there were several accidents. People were getting in the way of the real scientists. I thought in the end that movie did a great job of focusing in on what needs to be done to make, you know, tornado forecasting, you know, more of a sure thing as opposed to, well, we think it could happen.
I wasn't aware of that it had caused so much.
Oh, God, yeah. The number of storm chasers that were basically derelict storm chasers right after that, it basically quadrupled. And I heard from a lot of friends who were you more expert storm chasers, next thing you know, they would be pretty much setting up shop, trying to figure out where to go, and there were people waiting to follow them. And here they are trying to go one place to another, and they're kind of getting in the way. It was a bit too much. It was a bit too over the top. But the movie, I thought, did a great job of promoting, you know, the whole art of thunderstorm, thunderstorm forecasting. But it took the chasing part, and it kind of made a mess of it, without a doubt.
You know, it reminds me back in my early days of when I was doing news in Detroit. And I was talking about my old radio job. When word got out that Jimmy Hoffa had disappeared and everybody thought he was buried somewhere outside Detroit, and they had little maps in the newspaper, and I went out there to report on it, and everybody with a shovel in town was out there trying to dig up Jimmy Hoffa.
Yeah, that definitely was.
I'm just saying, it's like the power of the media and movies and so forth. You get all these knuckleheads out there who are going to chase a tornado.
Right, right. Mike, did you ever get to see the movie The Perfect Storm?
You know, I never have seen that.
I saw that.
I want to see that movie so much.
Yeah, Heather, I think you would probably agree that the movie was more about the downing of the Andrea Gale, which was the fishing boat that had George Clooney and Mark Wahlberg and I think John Seymour.
George Clooney's dead?
Yeah, in that one. Yeah, he
goes down with his ship.
He goes down with his ship. After
I know. I mean, I know the end of it, although I've never seen it.
Yeah, they went up over a 100-foot wave, which was way overdone. I thought the weather part of the movie was just a bit too much to have a 100-foot wave. Granted, did they have that? Yes, but I thought the movie kind of took the weather part and went over the top. Other than that, I thought the movie was a great story about what drives people to reach that ultimate goal that maybe has eluded them for, you know, a long period of time. And what was also kind of lost in that movie was how complicated the weather was leading up to that perfect storm, which was this huge nor'easter that actually gobbled up the remnants of what was Hurricane Grace. And the storm sat there and sat there and sat there off the coast of Newfoundland and the Northeast for about 3 or 4 days. And the only real science that they had with that movie was showing some buffoon weather guy in Washington, D.C. with a napkin over his tie, eating a donut, asking a weather producer, wow, look at this. Can you grab me an infrared satellite view of this? They didn't really get into the aspects of the storm itself, and I think they had plenty of time to do that. And they never did. And he was a guy who ended up doing The Weatherman, believe it or not, the same director. And again, he took a movie about weather and kind of made fun of it a little bit. So again, I think that movie, The Perfect Storm, had a great opportunity to show a little bit more science in it. And I guess they were afraid that people weren't going to get it. But trust me, I think the average person who goes to see a movie that may be dealing with weather, I think wants a little bit of that science. I think it's kind of fun to hear.
Well, one would think you'd expect it as well, because the movie is, in fact, called The Perfect Storm. It's not the perfect boat crash, drowning of fishermen. It's The Perfect Storm.
Hello, it's a metaphor. It's all about
metaphors. Yeah,
it's
metaphor.
About school, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, you know, geek. Rick, I hate to break this to you, but a lot of people think the weather is kind of geeky.
You know what? It's kind of geeky, but you know what? We keep getting record enrollment at schools like Lewis University for aviation meteorology and the College of DuPage and Valparaiso University. Mike, I've never seen so many young people hooked by weather. And it's not just because of, quote, the Weather Channel, but it's the ability to look at so many different things now with webcams, with people sending in photographs through Facebook. I was blown away by when we had that storm that came through here on a Thursday. How many people I bumped into said, did you see the size of those big flakes Thursday afternoon? And next thing you know, there were like pictures galore on TV stations and on websites. And the technology that we're in right now with smartphones and people taking pictures of weather and the ease of sending it and transmitting information gets people excited about it. And now I think the way we even see weather on TV, it's changed from just showing, you know, visible satellite or radar imagery, but we can actually now have these cars with Mobile 2 or Channel 7 on the go, and they're actually showing conditions from one side of the city to the other, where I think about 3 or 4 years ago, those things wouldn't happen. So you would have people on the south side of Chicago and Joliet and Southern Will County go, oh, those weathermen were wrong. They didn't get it right. We didn't get nothing. And it wasn't until maybe the next day did you hear about 6 to 9 inches across Northern Lake County and McHenry County, where now you see it live on the news with much ease of technology. And I think people go, wow, that's really interesting how something like that happens, as opposed to in the past, you immediately, you know, bash the weather forecast for it being wrong. So I think people are getting a better appreciation for science. And I think the same thing holds true with gardening and agriculture and the same thing. It's a better way of getting technology into science and transmitting it through a medium that a lot of people can appreciate.
All right. So, all right. The two things I got to say about that. So, and I'm using air quotes for the storm this week, is that it was a bust, you know, and they had the TV crews had the people standing out on the freeway ready for something that never happened. And the other thing is, why did we have such big snowflakes?
Oh, well, in 60 seconds, this was pretty much acting like a springtime event. You had a lot of warm air moving into the area very, very quickly. So instead of getting more of a horizontal type of cloud, they were more vertical, or what we call convective. At the time that we were 38 degrees here in Chicago, it was 67 in Evansville, 76 in Memphis, and 82 in Little Rock, Arkansas. So that warm air that was rotating northward was supposed to give us a little bit better chance of afternoon kind of thundery type of snow, but that moved off to the east very quickly. It ended up getting too warm, and I really think, Mike, that the fact that Lake Michigan is about 5 degrees warmer than normal, that was one of the reasons why we didn't get as much snow here in the city. But I don't know if I'd call that storm a bust. I think the forecast worked out pretty well. It moved northward a little bit. It developed a little bit too late, but overall, when you have northern suburbs getting nailed with 8 to 10 inches of snow.
Well, for those guys, it wasn't a bust, right?
Yeah, it wasn't a bust.
So what do we got? You got a minute here. So what's coming up this week?
Yeah, the short-term forecast, if anybody's listening to you in Daytona Beach, probably the race is going to be delayed or canceled today because there's rain expected for the 500 down there in Florida.
Oh, dear.
Beautiful today, beautiful tomorrow. Rain Tuesday, nice Wednesday, and then rain on Thursday, but nothing in the way of snow coming back at us anytime soon.
Do we get cooler again?
Long-range, Mike, the first week and a half to 2 weeks of March looks to be cold, but the second half of the month looks to be mild. And even though we finish up meteorological spring on Wednesday, as we all know in Chicago, that could easily go for another month around here. But so far, 19 inches of snow for the season, 40 less than last year at this time.
Wow. All right, Rick DeMaio Weather. You can go to DeMaioWeather.com or go to MikeNovak.net, go to the homepage, and he'll be there. I'll talk to you next week, Rick.
See you, Mike.
Second hour, we're talking about the plant on the south side of Chicago. Really interesting stuff. I think you want to stick around for that. We will have Blake Davis here and talk about sustainability, so I hope you are with us.
KHJ Los Angeles.
Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
Summer in the neighborhood, hanging out with nothing to do. Sometimes we
driving around.
When did that song come out, Heather? That's like
that song was about. I want to say
early aughts, right?
Yeah, Everclear kind of hit their stride in the mid to late 90s. So I want to say it was 99, 2000, 2001. Yeah. I can look it up
because I'm thinking
that was on their follow up album. That one made a splash, but not as big as their one before.
Because he's talking about things that happened. So how old is Everclear? That's what I want to know.
Oh well, he's older than me.
Because he's talking about, you know,
AM
that
radio
stuff.
And the AM 70s. Radio.
I mean, that's my time.
Yeah.
I remember my first transistor radio.
And I was in the boombox on the shoulder FM radio generation.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. So that's what, yeah, that's
I
what
was,
we were.
I can remember my first transistor radio. That was such a cool thing. You know, wow, I don't even have to plug it in. How cool is that?
And for Christmas, I got an antique bookshelf radio.
Yeah.
One of those, it's the thing weighs like 1,000 pounds. It's made of real wood and steel. It's amazing.
Yeah. There's somebody in the studio here, I'm sure, who remembers the first transistor radio, too. Blake Davis.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay, how are you?
Good. I actually built a crystal radio as a child. So.
See, I should have known that. You're gonna one-up me here. It's like it's not good enough for you just to have one. You got to build yours yourself.
I grew up in central Pennsylvania, and I used to lay in my bed late at night when finally the AM reception was good across the country,
oh, yeah.
And I listened to world's largest station and all those DJs.
Yeah. Blake Davis is here, and he's got a ton of titles to go. I put the title thing there, I should go back to it, but I was going to play the. Before I do that, I'm going to play this. Well, not that. This is what I wanted to play. Something you and I did recently.
We're here with Blake Davis. West 46th Street, down at the back of the yards in Chicago. I mean, and that's part of the whole, what we're dealing with. This is a plant that used to handle meat.
Correct. It used to be a meat packing plant, 93,000 square feet. Closed about 5 years ago. We were able to buy it. We're now turning it into the Chicago's first vertical farm.
And we'll leave it at that, because that was quite a tour you gave us, and you give lots of tours down there, and we're gonna talk about that in just a second. That video is on my website, mikenovak.net. It's right on the homepage. It's a couple of videos, and the first one there is just Blake sort of explaining what the plant is all about. The second one, he walks us through the aquaponics. And that's really cool, too. You are the I'll get to your title in a second. But before I do that, I just want to make sure people know that they're listening to the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. You can find us on Facebook, on Twitter. We podcast the show. You can get it on iTunes. You can download it from the website. Go to MikeNovak.net. You can listen to a streaming. I hope some of you are doing that this morning. And you're also welcome to call in, 773-763-9278, if you have any questions. As I put the information up on – yes, Heather?
The call-in number on your homepage is incorrect.
What?
It says 8278, not 9278.
Oh, typo.
Yep, typo. Sorry. But, yeah, just people need to know it's WCPT.
You're right. It
on
does
your
say
keypad.
It's 9278.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. WCPT. Kathleen.
But the video is very cool.
The video is cool. If you get a chance, take a look at it. I want to get back to my guest, who is the adjunct professor of sustainability and urban agriculture in the Industrial Technology and Management Program at the School of Applied Technology at the Illinois Institute of Technology. Come on, you guys, you academics, what's with you? Just say sustainability guy.
I'm the jack of all trades for sustainability. I also teach in students under a program called the Interprofessional Research Opportunities Program, which is an undergraduate research projects for undergraduate students at IIT. Every student's required to take at least 2 IPROs, and so I...
What's an IPRO? Come on, don't you throw acronyms at me.
IPRO is an undergraduate research project.
Okay.
And so my job is to kind of think of interesting things for undergraduates to do. Most of our students...
I got some. They can mow my lawn. They can weed my garden if you want. Sorry.
Most of my students are engineers or architects, so they're professionally trained, and they get a lot of book work when they're at IIT, but they don't have actual projects to work on. So the iPro program is to try to get them practical projects that they can actually work on that will help introduce them to the world of work and all of that. And
well, you know, I don't know if you heard that earlier we had the students on from the Montessori school.
I did, and that sounded like a wonderful opportunity.
You're doing kind of the same thing. It's like now when you get to this level of your education, you want to be doing practical stuff out
Correct.
In the real world. Now, name something, a practical project that... That one of your students might get involved in.
Okay, so I've actually worked on several projects this semester. I'm working with some students on a project where we're looking at the use of stationary batteries to store energy so that we can actually work some more renewables into our grid system. So we're looking at the types of batteries, how they'd be installed in the Chicago area.
All right, I'm going to stop you right there. You're a tech guy, all right? Why is it taking us so long?
I'll take that as a compliment.
It is. I just look at you. You're a professor. You're a smart guy. You're involved with the plan. We'll talk about that in a second, your involvement. But why is it that the battery technology hasn't moved faster than it has? I keep thinking that we could have solved the electric car problem decades ago, but nobody had a real interest in it. And why hasn't that happened?
Well, I agree with you. I think batteries would have moved a lot further along if some of the companies that had started out, like with the old EV1 and things, if they had actually been pursued, with much more vigor. But my understanding of the battery market is that there's lots of good potential things that are in the pipeline. It's just going to take a while to get them commercialized.
But we keep hearing that. Come on, we keep hearing that, all right? It's like we've been hearing that since the Gemini project, when we were sending people around the Earth in preparation going, oh, look at this great technology. Now we got these batteries. They can do anything. Well, these cells, we've talked about cells. Ooh, everything's cell. And the truth of the matter is we haven't done it. We haven't had that technological breakthrough that takes us to the next level. And the breakthrough, frankly, in my opinion, is it makes internal combustion obsolete. And I think that's what kind of people are kind of afraid of. What happens if we get the breakthrough that makes internal combustion obsolete?
Well, you got to wonder who actually has an incentive to push this forward. Ever Ready is not the one who's going to benefit from this. So. But I think, if nothing else, we'll be dragged into it by foreign competition. I talked to a Ford VP a couple of years ago, and he said, well, we can make twice as many hybrids, but we can't make them because all the technology is owned by the companies from the Far East, and so we get our allotment. And
what about our own technology? Don't we have – you're a smart guy, as I keep saying, and you get smart students, and that you're putting them out in the real world to do real things. Who's coming – okay, I would think that independently – you could come up, there's many times in the history of the planet that the same technology was developed independently in different parts of the globe.
Yeah, I agree with you, but I think that it's, there's a lot of money that's invested in, combustion engines.
We're owned by the oil
them.
Companies.
Right.
Well, once
not
again.
Not necessarily, but there's an incentive for GM to do what it does really well, which is
and really
internal
slowly
combustion engines.
When it comes to batteries.
Correct.
Oh yeah, we're working on that. We're going to get to that real soon.
Yeah,
oh,
but first of all, you got to give us a little leeway on those car efficiency standards because that's pushing it too far.
Yeah, exactly. We'll have you at 54 miles per gallon by 2025. I don't even know if the planet's going to be here in 2025. The Europeans already have over 54 miles per gallon, don't they?
Yep, they do.
So what are we doing? I mean, I'm embarrassed when the president comes out and says, "Oh, and all my environmental friends and God love them, and I know they're doing the right thing, and they say we got to support the president for 54." And I'm thinking, are you kidding? He should be looking at 80. And I don't know why he's not doing that. And I'm embarrassed by it, frankly.
Well, I think we're going to have severe environmental crises between now and 2030.
Really?
And I think that we're headed for for a rough period, and I think that may make things move a lot faster than we expect right now.
Well, I think that's the perfect segue to talk about the plant, because one of the things you're trying to do there is create, as I said earlier, create the future.
Correct.
And I'm glad he just nods and says, yep, that's what we're doing.
I love the way you said that before.
good. Come on into the studio. We've got more folks here from the plant. In fact, if whoever's driving by the studio, just stop.
Really?
Drop in. What – for folks who don't understand – and I played a little bit of that video earlier, which you can find at my website, mikenowak.net. Go to the homepage, and it's MikeNowak. This is an old meat packing plant on the south side of Chicago, and the brains behind this is John Adel, among others, but he's sort of the prime mover, right?
He is. He's the he's our prime sponsor. He also has another building called the Chicago Center for Sustainable Manufacturing, which is an incubator for small fabricating businesses, and he kind of cut his teeth on that, and that's about 30,000 square feet.
Yeah, let me read a quote about that I found on your website. The quote about that building, the Chicago Sustainable Manufacturing Center, he was able to transform the facility from, quote, a burnt-out shell to 100% occupancy while using a mixture of waste stream recycled materials and leading-edge technology to make the building exceptionally energy efficient and pleasantly non-toxic. The renovation was assisted by a core group of volunteers and by bartering with suppliers, tenants, and scrappers. Now, you know, he's one of those guys that you just throw up your hands. You say, there's no way I can ever do anything like that.
He's one of those guys you want on your side.
Yes. So why isn't John Adel working on the battery, okay, right now? I want him to make that battery so we can make an internal combustion obsolete.
One thing at a time.
Okay.
He was an art major.
And those voices you hear, that's got to be Carla Magara.
Hi.
She's the farm manager at the plant, and to her left is Tim Sparer.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Tim. Welcome. We're going to get to you guys in a second, but we have to start from the beginning because we start with a 93,000-square-foot meatpacking plant that until 5 years ago was a meatpacking plant or a former meatpacking plant.
Right.
And right now isn't, frankly, a whole lot more than that. Okay, because I did the tour. 2 hours. Boy, man, you want to get your ear talked off. You'd get Blake Davis to give you a tour of the plant.
And that happens every Saturday at 2 o'clock, and everybody's welcome to come and have me talk their ear off.
And what does it cost to get a tour?
$10.
Yeah, it's well worth it. I mean, if you want a tour of something, again, do you want a tour of the future? There you go. Go to the plant.
Well, we asked for $10 for the tour, but we also asked you to come back and volunteer, and we feed our volunteers. So our pitch is give us $10 now and then come back, volunteer, and earn your money back.
And I bet you get a number of people who want to come back and work there.
Quite a few.
It's really hard to explain what you're going to see when you go there because I went there, I photographed it, videotaped it. By the way, wear your coat because it's very cold in that building. And you got to know, and she's better now, but Kathleen spent a week in bed after that.
Sorry.
Because it was so cold in there. She got this respiratory thing. And it's just occupational hazard at the moment, isn't it?
Well, we can't really turn up the heat because there never was any heat in the building. It was always refrigerated below freezing
for
about 100 years. It was meat.
It
was the whole building was a big meat locker.
And it's, in the shadow of the old Chicago stockyards. What's amazing, and I wish I could describe it, but you took us to the basement, you took us to to the various levels. There's hooks on the ceiling and tracks where the meat used to be. But in the basement, there's tools and pipes and the coolant system.
There's a room that used to hold all the ammonia compressors from the old building. They used ammonia before Freon was invented, and so they have
which you said is very efficient. But if it leaks, you all die.
Yes, it's an inhalation hazard is what they call it.
I love it. It's like, oh, this really works well, except don't spring a leak, okay? Yeah. And you're still ripping out walls and machinery. There's a photo on my website, and I had my picture taken there because it looks like a transporter from Star Trek. And I'm just standing. I've got my Star Trek pose on there. So go down, take a look at that. Just amazing, amazing stuff. This is not just going to be one business. It's going to be an incubator for a lot of different businesses. Talk about some of the different businesses.
Yeah, okay. So what we're trying to do in the building is we're trying to set up a vertical farm, but we're also trying to set up an incubator for small food businesses. So the idea is that people need space that's suitable for what they're doing, that is inexpensive to rent. And they want to either start a new business and they want to grow it in our space, or they want to take an existing business and make it larger.
Do you have a preference for the kind of business you want there?
We do, actually. We want all kinds of food businesses. We're putting in a shared kitchen, so anybody who's doing cooking, certainly. We're putting a greenhouse on the roof, and you can rent space in the greenhouse. So we would like people who want to do vertically integrated businesses. So, for instance, in the building, you could grow basil. In the greenhouse on the roof, you could process it into pesto in the kitchen, and you could actually sell it on site. So some business like that. We also were looking for things like breweries, which had needed waste heat, which we're producing, and also were generating waste that we could use within our processes in our building. So any businesses that are producing a lot of organic waste, we actually have a way to use those.
The key is the anaerobic digester.
Correct.
And you intend, or at least your goal, is to make this a completely closed-loop system by 2015, is that it?
We're expecting this will take about 6 to 8 years.
Oh, okay.
And
the
reason is because we are using almost completely volunteers. We actually only have 3 paid staff in the building, not including me, not including John. So almost all the work is being done by volunteers, which is why we are very anxious to have volunteers come and work on the future with us.
Well, you heard that. So step up. You can find the link to the plant at my website, mikenovak.net. But if you want to check it out, just go to www.plantchicago.com. I've been meaning to talk to you about your marketing. I love the idea. You know, it's called The Plant, and that makes a kind of sense, but it's I would imagine it's kind of hard to track down if you're just doing a Google search. You know, you have to have The Plant.
We gotta
do a little bit about the marketing here.
Well, it's better than it was. We were trying to do factory farm, and we got roundly booed for that. So The Plant is actually an upgrade from our previous
But see, now that makes total sense. Factory farm. But you're right. It's like, yeah, that's bad juju. Okay, you really can't use that. All right, I want to. What was that?
That's what we call the garden at our studio building.
Factory farm?
But it was a former factory.
Yeah, I mean, and I understand that, but
get the joke.
They have such a bad reputation, and rightly so.
Yeah.
Factory farm.
Not what you want to pull up when you go to search for that.
Getting to, you explained the whole system to me when we were there, and I want to get to the farming in a second, but you're the tech guy.
I and my students actually set up most of the vertical farming stuff that's there.
Explain what you consider vertical farming. I know it's supposed to be raised, but right now it's actually horizontal farming, at least your aquaponics. And you showed us, and there's a video of the aquaponics system on my homepage, mikenovak.net. You can see that video. Why do you call it vertical farming?
Okay, vertical farming is a concept that came out of New York. The idea is that you're in the city, you need to be able to grow food in very dense packages rather than being spread out all over the landscape like you do in the rural areas. So the idea of a vertical farm is you'd have a usually an obsolete industrial building that's 4 or 5, 6 floors, and you would actually put farming on each one of those floors. So it's controlled environment agriculture, and it's on several floors of usually a vacant industrial building in the city.
So it's not necessarily one row crop that just goes up 20 stories?
Correct. Usually not.
Okay, because this is not the case. But so in a sense, it's vertical farming is a metaphor.
It is, and the advantages of vertical farming is that there's no droughts, there's no heat, there's too much heat, there's no pests that will invade your space. You can grow 24/7.
Oh, you're always
going to
get fungus gnats. Okay, there's always going to be fungus gnats. You know that white fly will get in there at some point. You know, come on, we all know. All of us who grow plants understand how that works.
But the idea is that you will be able to control all of the environmental factors, the humidity, the amount of CO2, the temperature, all of these things that make plants grow to their optimal, you can actually control in a controlled environment space like the vertical farm.
So how is vertical farming different from hydroponics, different from aquaponics?
Aquaponics, hydroponics are all ways to implement vertical farming.
Okay.
The type of farming that you use inside isn't important. And before we actually finalized the system we're using at the plant, we tried, half a dozen other methods, aeroponics. We tried drip irrigation. We tried a whole bunch of different things. The reason we settled on aquaponics is that it's a relatively efficient system. You're actually setting up an analog of a simple ecological system. And so you have the fish producing wastes. The wastes are actually used for fertilizer for the plants. The plants will take that fertilizer out and return pure water back to the fish tanks. That's the simple idea of what we're trying to do with the aquaponic system.
So while your energy system is going to be closed loop, so is the growing system.
Absolutely. It already is. We actually have a working system now that we're producing food out of, both fish and plants, that's pretty much sealed.
But you're not selling the fish yet.
We're not selling the fish yet, although we are selling some of the plants.
And, yeah.
And
that's a problem, I assume.
No, we're not selling any of the plants yet.
You can pull that mic a little closer.
We have lots of people who are very interested in buying them, but we're still sorting out.
Okay. So you're just making sure it all works and it's all growing properly, and then at some point...
Yeah, we're testing different varieties, different variables, trying to get exactly our timing down so we know what we'll be able to produce when we're stepping up to that level.
Mm-hmm. In the studio, I have Blake Davis, Tim Sparer, Carla McGarra, all from the plant on the south side of Chicago, back of the yards. You might have heard of this. You've guys been on my radar for a couple of years. I just haven't gotten around to do anything about it, but finally I did, and I'm so glad that you reached out, Blake, and invited me to take the tour. And it's just one of the other things you talk about, closed-loop systems. A lot of the flotsam and jetsam of meatpacking over decades is still in that building.
Right, and we're trying to preserve some of the architectural character. For instance, there's big, huge meat-smoking rooms, essentially, 40 feet long, 16 feet wide, 12 feet tall, where they actually smoke the meat. And we're taking those apart, reusing those pieces. We're bending the metal into tabletops and backsplashes for kitchens and things like that. So we're reusing all of that.
Oh, you're saving every nut and bolt in that place. Unbelievable.
We actually are. We closed on the building in July of last year, and in the time since, we've only actually sent 2 dumpsters worth of stuff out of the plant.
Amazing. And just use whatever you can. And we
reuse everything. We collect all the foam, everything, the rubble.
Even the foam.
The rubble from knocking down brick walls we're using to...
The glass bricks there, too.
Absolutely.
You got stacks, like a room with just stacks and stacks of glass bricks in them. Unbelievable stuff. All right, we're going to continue this conversation in a second. If you have a question or a comment, 773-763-9278. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk AM and FM. And just to give you a heads up when we come back, I do want to talk about the farming aspect of this, especially the idea of a greenhouse on the roof, which to me seems redundant. It does, and I'm sure there's a logic behind it. You're laughing at me, but there's always a method to your madness, right?
We always have something in mind.
Yes, you do. Okay. If you've listened to my show recently, you know that I've been sounding the alarm about a proposed open-pit sand mine adjacent to the eastern entrance of Starved Rock State Park. Openlands is also working to save this ecologically and culturally significant park. Go to openlands.org to read their action alert about this important environmental issue. There you'll find contact information for Governor Pat Quinn, Lieutenant Governor Sheila Simon, and Illinois Department of Natural Resources Director Mark Miller, as well as information to help you craft a personal message. Did you know that the sand mine would have harmful ecological and hydrological impacts, that it would destroy a recognized wetland, and that it would pose harm to the federally endangered Indiana bat? Openlands knows, you know, we were talking the other week about the proposed gun range down in Calumet, and then the Eagles showed up and kind of mess that all up. But it's interesting. Eagles have a reputation. Well, they're the national bird, so eagle trumps everything. What about the Indiana bat? And people will laugh and say it's a bat. Well, guess what? Bats are being threatened. The white nose syndrome that is killing bat populations all over the country. What if we lose bats? Well, we lose, they eat insects, they have other functions that they do in the wild. Just because it's a bat doesn't mean it's less important than an eagle. So I'm just letting you know. Openlands knows that we all share the responsibility to protect our open spaces and natural resources for generations to come. Get more information at openlands.org and write to Governor Quinn today so that someday you can tell your children and grandchildren, I helped save Starved Rock.
At Innovative Insulation Solutions, their mission is to deliver the highest performing foam insulation systems available on today's market with an incredible R value of up to 7 per inch. Their history of safe and effective application of these systems, coupled with total dedication to quality, consistently earns their customers' trust and satisfaction. They specialize in all types of foam insulation. Spray-applied close-cell and open-cell polyurethane foam insulation, closed-wall cavity injection, and foam-in-place masonry block insulation. Innovative Insulation Solutions is totally committed to anticipating, solving, and supporting all of your foam insulation needs. Call Innovative Insulation Solutions today at 847-454-9081 or go to gotfoaminsulation.com. That's 847-454-9081 or go to gotfoaminsulation.com.
Can you feel it? That low kind of growling sound? You know, like it's 11 a.m. and you haven't had anything to eat yet? Oh, yeah. That's March. Ready to come in like a... Well, winter hasn't exactly been a lion this year, okay? March is getting ready to come in like a wily coyote. And I have a copy of the March-April issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine in my hot little coyote paws. You're going to need this baby to find out about the best spring flowering trees. 33 of them jammed into one story with photos. Of course, many of us tend to forget which time of year is best to divide which perennials. Or maybe that's just me. Regardless, there's a story that will let you know which of your spring plants are ready for the old lift and separate. Of course, one of the best things about this issue is that it comes with the annual resource guide. Heck, that's a whole nother magazine. And of course, there's my column on the inside back page as welcome as a coyote digging through your garbage. Get a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. Go to ChicagolandGardening.com. Or call 888-265-3600, 888-265-3600. Don't forget that you can write us on Facebook. You can go to the Mike Novak Show while you're there. Like me. That would be nice. And I'm so needy. Or you can tweet us. My handle on Twitter is at Mike Now. In fact, we got a couple of tweets here. This is the question. Are your guests thinking about using finches or other birds in the horizontal garden? I'm sorry I called it the horizontal garden. It's actually the vertical garden. That was me. I was making a point here. I'm sorry about that, Blake. Now I've destroyed the whole illusion that you have there. And anyway, they write, some greenhouses are using them to control bugs. And by the way, that's Blake Davis, Tim Sparer, and Carla McGarrah from The Plant on the Chicago South Side. Are you thinking about using birds at all?
We would use definitely beneficial insects to control harmful insect populations. I don't know if birds would be the best fit indoors for us.
It might. Well, you got space there.
Yeah.
I gotta tell you, there's a lot of space there. Okay, I posed the question about the greenhouse on the roof. Now, first of all, Carla and Tim, is that something that you're going to be involved with as you do your growing?
Yeah, hopefully in the future.
Don't be a shy of the mic.
Sorry, quiet talker.
That's okay.
Yeah, that's definitely farther off onto what we're planning and considering right now. Right now we're focusing on developing the basement aquaponic systems, experimenting with some models for true vertical growing, mm-hmm. like you would picture a vertical farm being like a vertical wall.
Now, you're the farm manager, so does that mean the aquaponics?
The aquaponics, but I also work with Tim and a bunch of our other volunteers to coordinate what's going to happen in the outdoor spaces.
So what's going to happen in the outdoor? Because obviously you – oh, man, I can't – have you done the soil test there? Do you know what's in the soil on that piece of property?
There were a few soil tests several years ago when Pure Food's still in the building. I think it was sort of part of them closing everything down. And there are a few sort of trouble spots. But there's probably less than you might imagine overall because it's mostly just sort of packed gravel that's just impacted, you know, been sitting there for a very long time.
And they were dealing with meat mm-hmm. rather than chemicals, although there were probably some chemicals used in the processing.
Well, we actually had two environmental studies done, a level one and a level two, and because the building had always been a food facility, a lot of the worst chemicals like asbestos and a lot of high VOC chemicals weren't allowed in the building because it had always been a food facility. So the only thing that we found that was a problem was that there was oil that had leaked out of a truck or something in the yard, and that's a
small
area.
Well, and there must be lead also from the fuel that was used for the trucks coming into the parking lot.
True in every place in Chicago.
Well,
I'm sure.
Yeah, in my backyard too.
Yeah,
okay?
I don't think this is a pristine environment, but all things considered, this is probably than most.
You look around on the outside, as you pointed out. There's barbed wire. There's railroad tracks. All this stuff.
Not really any soil there to speak of at the moment.
So what
whether or not it's contaminated is somewhat moot. I mean, we'll obviously contain.
So what do you plan to do to contain it and to, what kind of – you're going to bring in soil, obviously.
Yeah, we're going to build raised beds.
Raised beds mostly. Yeah, mm-hmm. A little geochemical barrier, right? That's the hip way of saying, a couple
of wood chips.
A couple layers of wood chips and burlap and everything else.
So, and what is it you intend to use the outdoor gardens for?
That's kind of an ongoing process, I think. I think there's some talk of using some of the space as actually like a small urban farm incubator, has been one recent discussion. A lot of space for education and maybe community gardening for the neighborhood. And
Much more accessible than a lot of areas of the building, I would think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's kind of a visual intersection between what's going on inside the building and then the rest of the community. So we want that to be a good signifier when people come to the building. It's the first thing they see. Oh, this is what's going on here now.
Uh-huh.
The breweries, a brewery is going to be one of our first tenants as well, and they are very interested.
Always a good thing.
Always a good thing.
It's like, yeah.
So no
the
matter
beer's
how
here.
Bad things are going, the end of the day will be great. But they actually are interested in having fresh hops grown. So one of the things Tim's been working on is actually growing locally adapted versions of hops to be able to supply to the brewery.
Tim, have you ever grown hops before?
I haven't. This is one of the things that's been outsourced to an iPro team, one of the IIT students, and Carla, formerly.
Yeah, my partner and I are homebrewers, so we have some hops growing in our garden.
And analysis. I did backgrounds background on Blake before. What are your backgrounds here?
In terms of my background's mostly in education, and I did a lot of agriculture education with students on a small organic farm.
Where?
For a number of years in Pennsylvania. It's a small Quaker farm.
Oh.
So that's sort of the background I come to.
Carla?
Things at the plant.
I have a culinary background, and I grew up on farms in Arkansas and North Dakota.
So you guys all come by it honestly. Some of us are just, you know, city boys trying to make a go of it here. And,
it's all right.
All right. And then the question I posed before was, you got a greenhouse on the roof. Like I said, it seems a little redundant. What's the purpose of that?
Okay.
Because the roof is where you get your sun anyway. Generally, a greenhouse
Absolutely.
Is so that you can capture that sun. Well, it's already up there, you know?
Okay, so one of the things we haven't talked about is that what actually powers the plant is this combined heat and power system. So we received a grant from the state of Illinois in the amount of about $1.65 million to set up both a combined heat and power system and also an anaerobic digester. So what the combined heat and power system will be to take biogas from the anaerobic digester, burn it in a turbine, and have it run a generator, which will provide all the power that we need for the building. Then the waste heat will be used to fire up the kettles in the brewery and also to heat the space itself. So the reason you have a greenhouse on the roof is because it's actually very convenient to be able to heat it with the waste heat from the combined heat and power system.
Ah.
So it's actually, because it's right there, we can hook right in and we can heat the greenhouse. And a heated greenhouse is much more useful than an unheated greenhouse during the middle of the winter when you need it the most.
And you're going to be working with other businesses in the area, too, right?
That's correct.
Taking some of their discarded materials?
Right. We're actually going to be diverting about 32 tons a day of waste organic material from both the brewery waste and also from surrounding businesses that do meat processing, that do meat flavorings. We're going to be taking that waste from their plants, putting it in our anaerobic digester with the spent brewer's grains from the brewery, and actually using that to create this biogas, which is about 85% methane. So it's equivalent to using natural gas from the street, but you're making it yourself. And you're reducing the amount of waste that's going to landfills, and you're actually producing a valuable byproduct called digestate, which is actually a high-value nitrogen fertilizer, which will be saleable.
Oh, I thought that was what you take when you have heartburn. That's a different product, isn't it?
Yes.
The question about that I have about the anaerobic digester is kind of the same question I had about battery technology. Where's that technology right now, and are you making a step forward in using this anaerobic digester?
Well, we're actually getting the money for this from a grant program that is generally given to farmers downstate. Anaerobic digestion is now being used 99% of the time in Illinois as actually a way of treating the animal manure from these big factory farms downstate. So when you have, you know, 100,000 turkeys at a time, you can't just kind of put that on the back 40 and be done with it. It's a big waste issue. So anaerobic digesters are being used primarily in Illinois for that.
How many are being used? How popular is this technology?
It's quite a big program, and there's probably several thousand installed in
really?
Farms downstate.
Really? I had no idea.
Right. But it's being used for this specific sort of waste handling technology. What the advantage of what we're doing is that we're actually trying to kind of optimize the recipe that goes in. So if you just dump pig manure in it, you kind of get whatever you get. But we can actually optimize.
Pig manure in, pig manure out.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
So we can actually make a recipe that'll use, you know, a little bit of this from this business, a little bit of brewer's grains, and we can kind of make the optimal mixture. And so we can get the optimal amount of biogas, and therefore it'll be a much bigger contribution to energy creation in our building than it would be if we just had one type of waste. So that's kind of the improvement
investment that we're making on our system. And we're actually going to divert a lot of organic waste that's now going to the landfill, and we're actually going to be producing all the electricity we need, plus a little bit more to sell back to the grid. So that's kind of another piece of the plant, is that we're going to be energy self-sufficient. We're going to be net zero with energy, and we're actually going to be negative with waste because we'll actually be importing waste. So our mantra is kind of the only thing that leaves the plant is food, but we'll be bringing in waste and actually turning it into something more
useful.
And how
do you create the electricity?
It's actually going through a jet engine.
No.
Yes, absolutely. We're it's going through a jet engine.
You are yanking my chain.
No, and actually it's going to be delivered this week. We're working with a company called Alcor in Arizona. It's being run by a guy who's a former aircraft mechanic, so he buys surplus engines and turns them into turbines. And I was hoping it was actually going to be a military fighter, because my line was we're turning our swords into plowshares.
That would be great.
It turns out it's actually going to be from a 747.
Oh,
but
darn. So close.
So close.
The question I have to ask is there anything like this anywhere else in the country?
There are little pieces of this in a lot of places. The problem is that it's never really been integrated into such a large framework. So one person does some hydroponics here. Someone does some aquaculture here. Someone does an anaerobic digester in a farm downstate. But putting it all together and making it into a system that actually is kind of an industrial ecology, that's the part that I think we're really making progress on that nobody's doing as far as I know.
And when is this set to, all I need to know is when is the brewery open, okay?
I believe the brewery is scheduled for the end of the year. They were hoping, it's called the New Chicago Beer Company, and they were hoping to open on March 4th on the 175th anniversary of Chicago. But in fact, it took a little while for their suppliers now to get the tanks made and things, so... So that it looks like they'll be opening around the end of the year.
And how are you progressing, Carla, with the aquaponics?
Well, we have one system that's been online since early last year. Mm-hmm. That one's fully operational now. We're getting great production rates out of it, growing lots of arugula. Some of our fish are almost ready to harvest. Some of them are really ready to harvest. And then our second system we just brought online. We've got two of the four tanks stocked with 190 tilapia, and we're making the foam raft floating boards that we plant into to start filling that system with plants, too. It's partially planted now.
When do you see the beds going in outdoors?
So 2 went in last year. I want to say, I can't think of the square foot estimate, but a fair amount, and it's mostly going to be kind of tweaking stuff in there for a while, as you said, you know, kind of playing with the soil, playing with what we can bring in,
working
stuff like that.
The construction schedules.
Yeah, and there's the digester construction is going to be quite large, so kind of.
Yeah, I can't even imagine what a digester like that looks like.
Well, the stuff has to stay in the digester for about a month. So the tank is actually going to be 100 feet long and about 13 feet in diameter. And there's a big paddle wheel inside that keeps it all moving.
Like a big compost tumbler?
Yeah, like a compost tumbler. Uh-huh. Exactly. It's like on a different scale. Without oxygen, of course.
Correct.
And I think people need to understand that. We're tossing around anaerobic, and a lot of folks... They have no idea what we're talking about. So when you compost in your yard, you use oxygen, and that's one of the reasons you turn over your compost and your material, so that oxygen can get in there, so that the biology can take effect. And when it heats up, the biology is really working. What happens in an anaerobic condition, meaning there's no oxygen? So what's the biology in there?
Well, actually, anaerobic digestion actually goes back to earlier life forms that existed on Earth before we have all this oxygen. So these actually do kind of the same thing that composting microbes do, except that it does it without air. And the advantage of putting all of this in a closed tank is that you get this biogas that's fermented out of the digester. and that actually has some energy potential.
The point I will make is that if you do your regular composting poorly, sometimes you get that smell, and that's the anaerobic digestion, which is
another good reason to have it in a closed tank.
Yeah, absolutely. Even 100 feet long, you know?
Yeah. So this gas is actually then stored in a container, and then it'll be used as needed by the turbine that's running inside the plant. Mm-hmm. And the digestate is actually, because it's in a tank, a lot of the nitrogen in the compost pile ends up volatilizing and going into the atmosphere as nitrogen gas. When you have it in a closed tank, much of that nitrogen stays in the digestate itself. So it has about twice the nitrogen content of compost, which is why it's a valuable byproduct of this whole thing. So something that everybody's sending to the landfill now, we're getting all of our energy from, and we're also producing a valuable byproduct, which we can then sell.
All I have to say to you, mister, is that you're too smart, okay? Just stop it right now. Just stop that.
Okay.
Hey, listen, thanks so much for coming to the studio, all of you. Blake Davis. I'm not even going to read your credentials again. No, nobody's interested. He's a technology professor at
Illinois Institute of Technology.
IIT. Thank you. Thank you. And he's one of the brains. In 25 words or less, how'd you get sucked into this project?
I grew up on a farm. I'm the oldest of seven. We did about 2 acres of vegetable gardening. I've always thought it was a good idea, and I'm in the city, so what I can do
and
here.
And you've been teaching for a while, too. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And Carla McGarrah is the farm manager. Thank you. And Tim Sparer, let me know when you start planting stuff and start putting those beds in. And again, if you want more information, go to my website, mikenovak.net. You can click right on to the plant, and that website is www.plantchicago.com. Don't go to Factory Farm. They've given up on that title. Go to plantchicago.com. And by all means, go down and see this. I think the time to see it is now, because when it's done, you won't understand what went into this. I'm glad I got to see it when it's this, all this stuff, right, you know, floating around inside.
And I might mention that we're there Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 2 o'clock. We do a tour every day.
Monday,
Thursday, Saturday. We do a tour every one of those days.
That's just fabulous. All right. Thank you all for being here. And I hope that, I'm going to be there for the opening of the brewery and the anaerobic digester. You got to call me down to see that. I want to see that operation.
I'll make sure you're right up front.
But don't let it leak, okay? All right. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. If you've been a faithful steward of the earth, you might also get paid for it. According to realtors, trees can account for as much as 10% of a property's value. So take care of them and consider having a certified arborist evaluate the trees before you sell your home or before you buy one. A good inspection involves assessing the trees from top to bottom, analyzing everything that could affect their health, and determining whether they pose a threat to property and safety. And an example of that, a buddy of mine bought a house, and the day he was moving in to the house, the tree fell on it. Honest to goodness, the tree fell on his house the day, you know, he pulled up in the car with the stuff, and the tree was lying on the house. This is why you have your tree inspected ahead of time. An arborist from the Care of Trees will look for disease and harmful insects, will gauge the health and structural integrity of the trees, and will then present a written report noting any problems and recommending corrective measures. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more.
rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545. Or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
We've got just a few minutes left here. If something's going on, I want to tell you about, although I just got a tweet from J.A. Hey, J.A. All right. He says he dated a... He says a chick. Nice. Cool. Very PC. Dated a chick named Anna Robic. So that's his joke
of the
day.
It's better than anorexic.
I guess. Same joke, just different last name. That's what's going on there. And... I want to tell you about something. I got a couple of events coming up, but first of all, I got a message from Tom Shepard with the Southeast Environmental Task Force, and this is just weird. We've had a moratorium on landfills in the city of Chicago since 2005, and actually going back to 1983, where the long, hard fought wars to get companies to stop. And to get the city to ban landfills in the city, stop dumping there. And in 2005, there was a landfill moratorium that was supposed to go for 30 years. Well, guess what? Alderman Beal from the 9th Ward wants to lift the moratorium, which is supposed to be in effect till 2030. And it's just amazing that we could go backwards like this. At the time, the Eagles swooped in to get rid of the gun range. So who's going to swoop in to get rid of the landfills on the southeast side? What is it about you people that you need to dump everything in the southeast side of the city? Alderman Beal, this is not cool, all right? This is kind of back to the past. It's not even back to the future. It's just terrible. If you haven't heard about this, go to my Facebook page, Mike Novak, because I got a post on there from Tom Shepard and information on how you can contact your alderman and say no. Tell Alderman Beal we don't want to be buried in trash. The landmark landfill. Ban is not going to be overturned. It ain't going to happen. We're not going to let it happen. So I don't get that whole thing. Maybe Alderman Beal would like to come on the show and explain why we need to be dumping more trash in the city of Chicago. Maybe he'd like to do that. I'm open to that. If you want to come on the show and tell me why we need this, why it's so darned important that we have this, okay? So, in fact, go to my Facebook page and a couple of... I'll make sure that it's on both the Mike Novak show and on Mike Novak. There is a, speaking of Southside, Historic Pullman Garden Club is doing the second installment of their three-part winter lecture series today. The featured speaker is Cynthia Ogorek, a public historian. She's authored numerous books and founded a South Suburban History Museum. She'll be discussing two of her publications, Along the Calumet River, a documentation of the history and development of the Calumet River running through Illinois and Indiana, plus the Lincoln Highway, a story of Route 30, the first automobile road to span the entire country. I didn't know that, which is another Arcadia publication in the Images of America series. Now, this is a free event. And it's today from 3 to 5 p.m., held at the Greenstone Church Fellowship Hall in the Pullman Historic District. It's 11211 South St. Lawrence Avenue in Chicago. Refreshments will be served, and the two books will be available for purchase And if you want more information, call 773-568-2441. I would say just show up at 3 o'clock at the Greenstone Church Fellowship Hall in the Pullman Historic District, 11211 South St. Lawrence Avenue in Chicago. I am going to be doing a talk next Saturday presented by the University of Illinois Extension in Winnebago County, except it's up in Rockford. It's at the NIU Rockford campus, which is 8500 East State Street in Rockford. I've even got the note here. It's approximately 0.8 miles east of I-90 and the Best Western Clock Tower Resort on East State Street. But if you want to go there, I will be doing my talk. And it's part of a Master Gardener presentation, NIU, Rockford campus. And what I realized as I just look at this now that I don't have all of – let's see if I can find this real quick because I got just a couple of minutes. But I will be doing my talk called Thriving in Hard Soil. And it is about the community garden that I put together. I was only one of many people. It is on my block. We call it Green on McLean. And here we go. I think I've got it right. Here we are. It's Gardening for Food and Fun is the name of the program that is going on this weekend. And with the Master Gardeners from Winnebago County. And I'm speaking, at 8:45, which for me is early. But I hope you can come out there and join us and be part of this. It's not a lot of money. I don't have exactly what it is in front of me, but it's $40, for a whole day's worth of Master Gardener training. And I hope that some of you will stop by. And finally, next week, and I might talk about this a little bit next week as well, there's a edible seed swap, the Peterson Garden Project, sponsoring their annual seed swap March 4th, next Sunday, 2 to 5 p.m. at Swedish Covenant Hospital's Galter Pavilion on the second floor. That's 5140 North California, and there's no cost for this. So if you can make any of these, how cool. And, this is seed swap time. There's going to be one at the Chicago Flower and Garden Show. And if you can do support the Peterson Garden Project, I'm going to have them on soon because there are big changes up there this year that you need to know about. That's about it. Until next week, Heather, at this point, we say go green or
go home.
We will see you next week.